So he continues to does propaganda. He then tells the Jews to do this terrible work. He makes them do, you know, if Hirsch says he does, the men do the women's jobs, the women do the man's jobs. They feel bad about themselves. They're put in ghettos. They live by themselves. The Egyptians are slowly looking at the Jews as the other. This is, you know, look in the Holocaust. In 1933, when Hitler comes to power, if all the Nuremberg laws and, you know, if you go to any Holocaust museum, when you go through the progression, a lot of your time is spent in the beginning. All the laws, the Jewish star, all this stuff, you know, you take Kristallnacht. All these things were made to make the Jews feel like garbage and to make the enemies think the Jews were garbage. How do we know Paro is successful? Because two ways. First, when Moshe finally comes out and says, Paro, let him go. And Paro says, I'm going to make it worse. What do the Jews say to Moshe? What? Get out of here. We don't want you here. You didn't help us. And not only that, but earlier, Paro does not tell only to kill Jewish babies. At some point, the Egyptians are killing their own children. It's in the Psukim. The Egyptians, because they don't know where this baby's going to be born, so the Egyptians are so willing to kill their own children because they're worried what is going to happen for the Jews. That is all in Shemos, and that leads us now to Parshas Va'ira. So in Parshas Va'ira, which we'll talk a little bit about the role of the Makos in a little bit, because it's dominated. Parshas Va'ira is dominated by the Makos. But first, we see the bottom of 3:18, Hashem here gives the famous four Lashonos in Pasuk Vav, four Lashonos of Geula. L'chein amar l'vnei Yisrael. So Hashem says, I hear it. I hear their cries. It's time to go out. Mitachas sivlos Mitzrayim v'yitzalti eschem yavod asam v'go'alti eschem mizor natiyo shvatim gedolim v'lokachtem eschelilam. Right? These are the four stages. They are four stages. Right? We're getting ready for Pesach. They are four stages. It is a progression. First, it's just there's different ways to view it, but it seems at least there is just the year off from the Egyptians. Then there's the actual wiping out of the Egyptians. Then there's the redemption, the Torah, and then the closest to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then you have obviously in Pasuk Ches at the bottom, the Hevesi, which is the ultimate Geula that Hashem will bring us to the land. So that begins the progression. We look at page 320. Look at the top. Just briefly, as we a quick overview, the Torah says at the top, "Vaydaber Moshe Kein al Bnei Yisrael." What an amazing speech! So God says, "I hear it all. I heard their cries. I heard their issues, and they're ready to be taken out." Moshe takes God's words, comes to the Jews, and says to the Jews, "It's everything that God said." And the pasuk tells us, you know, it's fascinating. If you learn a little bit of Tanakh, this is not the only time. Like we did a shir on the Rosh Hashanah about Tzom Gedalia. This is not the only time that a prophet have said, I've talked to God. This is what God is telling me. When we did this shir on Tzom Gedalia, so you have the end of Yirmiyahu, the whole story, whatever the whole story is, but a few Jews are left in Israel, and they never want to talk to Yirmiyahu. And finally, Yirmiyahu, they say, Yirmiyahu, what should we do? And Yirmiyahu says, let me talk to God. Yirmiyahu says, talk to God. And God says, tell the Jews, stay in Israel. They're good, I'll protect them, everything's fine. We're reunited. But if they leave, punishment's going to follow. Great. So Yirmiyahu HaNavi comes back. He says, I spoke to God. This is what God says. Repeats the same thing. What do they tell Yirmiyahu HaNavi? Sheker ata. You're a liar. So Moshe says, this is what God said. We're going to go. Vaydaber Moshe kena b'nei Yisrael v'lo shamu al Moshe mikotze ruach. Ume avodah kasha. They can't listen. They have this shortness of spirit and this oppressed labor. So what does that mean? What does mikotze ruach ume avodah kasha mean? Now it could mean faith. Right? You have, for example, Kleinim is Kalman Shapiro, the great, Piazetz the Rebbe, the Ish Kodesh, who says that, yeah, this was in the Holocaust. This was a big issue. People were giving up faith. They didn't. If you lose hope and faith, you can't continue. So it wasn't they didn't believe him, but they were gone. They were finished. They didn't want to believe it anymore. They couldn't believe it. But if you look at Rashi, it's very interesting. If you look at Rashi, here, the second line in the right column, Rashi says, I won't read the whole Rashi. It's a big Rashi, but the first line is Koshu Meitza Rucho. It's you're exhausted. You're very, very busy. Paro's goal. Now, there's other explanations. For example, there's one explanation that Moshe had negotiated a day off for the Jews, which was Shabbos, right? And now Paro takes that away. So without their Shabbos, the same what is was true for us today was true for Jews in America in the 1900s. Was true for Jews in history. If you don't have Shabbos, you can't last. So Shabbos was their day of reconnecting, and Paro takes it away. But Rashi is simply saying they were busy. Paro says, "You know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to work them really, really, really hard. And as long as they're busy, 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 you know what will happen? They won't have time for anything." Right? So that is a fascinating piece. And it's a fascinating piece today. We are very busy. There's all these articles today. Right? Everybody's very busy. Everybody's crazy busy. Nobody has time for anything, right? It's almost as if there's some article I was reading recently, I don't remember where it was, that now it's a competition. The busier you can sound, the more important or more chashuv you can say. You know, someone says, "Warriors Day," like, "Oh my gosh, it was so busy." You know, like as if we should get an award. You know, because it makes, that's the world we live in, and everything is so fast, and so, and that's what Paro does. Paro says, "I'll make them work," and so, it's not that they don't have faith in Moshe, it's just that they don't have time, and they were so busy, that they can't even listen to Moshe speaking from God. So it's an important message in general about slowing down. There's a great study, if you ever read Malcolm Gladwell's book called The Tipping Point. It's a great book. The Tipping Point is about, it's one of these great organization books about, you know, not just self-help, but growth and productivity. So he has a study, I forgot the people in the study, but they asked seminary students to prepare a speech about, like, sensitivity in one building, and then they were going to give the speech, like, you know, off the cuff. They, like, quickly go run over here, prepare it, and then you're going to give the speech in another building. And after their quick preparation, they had to go to the other building. In between those two buildings was somebody like a homeless person or somebody, an actor, but on the floor and needing help. And here they were preparing speeches about helping and empathy. And what they found was that the people that didn't help was because they were rushed. They were busy. So, right? So too busy to help. Right? So that this whole idea about being too busy and too busy, it affects us, it affects our relationships, it affects our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we have to slow down sometimes. Okay, so that's Mikotzeroch Mevadar Kasha. Paro, you now have a little bit of lineage, and if you look, very interesting, if you look at page 322 briefly, so we continue on, page 322, the Torah says, in Pasuk Chavav in 26, it's a very important Pasuk. The Pasuk says, after this whole of the families, it says, Hu Aaron v'Moshe asher amar lahem, these are the families of Aaron and Moshe, Hotzias b'nei Yisrael me'aretz Yitzrayim al tzivosam. Rashi right away points out, Aaron and Moshe, it's usually not Aaron and Moshe, it's Moshe and Aaron. And Rashi says a wild thing. Rashi says, to tell us, she shkulin ke'echad, that they were equal. Come on. They're not equal. Moshe was Moshe. There was no prophet like Moshe. There was no anybody like Moshe. The end of the Torah is all about Moshe, how no one ever arose like Moshe. How can we say that they were equal? So what's the easy answer? What's the easy answer? They were equal in the sense that each had a mission. Moshe had a mission. Aaron had a mission. You know, and they did their, and also on the totem pole, yes, you can make an argument that Moshe obviously was higher up, whatever that means. But that's, we don't judge by a totem pole. We're judged by the missions that we're given. So Moshe did his thing great, and Aaron did his thing great. And because of that, right, if everybody on a football team had to be the quarterback, then that wouldn't work. Everybody has to have a job. When I was in high school, Tamir Goodman was in my class. So obviously he was very, very good at basketball. If you know anything about Jewish history. So when we were in 11th grade, so after 11th grade, he left. He still came for like learning in the morning, but he left because he was playing for different schools. He won a better competition. And now Leap Tag, all 5'8 of him, was now the tallest guy on the court. So that did not fare very well in terms of, I could not be a center. I could play a different position, but you have to know what your strengths are. That was not a very good season for us. In fact, Baltimore is known for their high school basketball. Not like Jewish, but high school basketball. So we were invited to a tournament that year. The year after, he was not playing anymore. They didn't realize. It was a very, very elite Christmas weekend. Four teams, like top four teams. And they thought... So we didn't. Why would we tell them? So we went. And the first game, we lost 75-20.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, it wasn't close. Anyway, but you have to know your role. Tamir, yeah, Tamir played in college a little bit, and now he's in Israel. He's a wonderful person. He does a lot of great inspirational speaking and basketball camps. He's a great, works great with youth. He's a tremendous Orthodox Jewish role model today. Okay, so let's continue a little bit. We then have Moshe, the showdown between Moshe and between Paro, telling them all about these different signs that's going to happen, and that's what we're going to talk about a little bit today. Just quickly, we'll go over some of the makos, but if you look at 3:26, for example, we get the mako of Dam. We'll go over sort of the overflow of the makos. When you look at the mako of Dam, if you look in Pasuk 19, the Torah says, V'yomar Shimo Moshe Emor El Aharon, that Aaron should kach matucha neteyotcha al mimeya Mitzrayim. Aaron should take the staff and raise it over Naharosim al Yoreim al Gmeim over all the water. Vakomikvei mimeyhem v'yudam, and it will turn to blood, and that will be the blood of Choeres Mitzrayim ba'itzim of Avanim. Why Aaron? So Rashi tells us why Aaron. So Rashi says because what? Why was Aaron given? Because Moshe was saved by the water. So wouldn't be nice if here's Moshe, who's going to take his staff and, you know, hit the water. Okay. Sakaras Hatov. It's water. Okay, but we find this throughout Tanakh. We find throughout rabbinic literature, people are being makir tov to inanimate objects. Why? It doesn't have feelings. Because what is it, when we discuss the idea of hakaras hatov, it does not mean that Hakaras HaTov in Judaism is not that the person should be thanked. That's part of it. If somebody does something nice for me, I should thank that person. But it's that I need to be somebody who is a Baal Makir Tov. I'm somebody that recognizes when good is done. And that's, Chesed is like that, Hachnasas Orchim is like, it's about our training ourselves to be this kind of person. So that's what the Torah is telling us. Of course the water doesn't have feelings, but Moshe feels bad because he owes a debt of gratitude. He is somebody who was Makir Tov. Right, there was a Rashiv in Israel, his name was Rav Guzman, who survived the Holocaust, had a yeshiva in Israel, and he would water the grounds of his yeshiva at 80, 90 years old. And they one time said to him, what are you, like, we have a gardening crew, what are you doing? And he said, when he was in the war, he was in Vilna, and he was in the forest for 2 weeks, and all he ate was shrubs and grass and berries. So he feels like Karas HaTov, so he wants the water. That's being Makir Tov. Makir Tov is not just I should thank that person, but I should train myself. The Hakaras HaTov does not mean thank you. Hakaras HaTov means to recognize. The same, right, not just an appreciation. Hakara means to recognize. I have to recognize when good is done. When we say Todah doesn't mean thank you. It really means to admit, to see it, to appreciate when I have to have eyes to notice what is happening. So that's why Moshe can't do the Makkah of Dam. We then get to the great Makkah of Tzfardeya. Just a few points about some of the Makkos. So you have here, the second pasuk here in Parakhes, page 328 at the bottom. Second pasuk beis vayet Aaron al yado amei Mitzrayim atal hatzfardeya, and it was one frog vatachas es eretz Mitzrayim. So everybody knows what happened. It was one frog, and how? Oh, how did it multiply? Oh, it's a good thing I came today. Look at Rashi on the left side. Says Rashi, Vatala Tzvardeya, Pasuk Beis, Tzvardeya Achas, it's in the singular, it's one frog. Haisa Vahayumakin Oso. What would they do? Why? Trying to kill it. What kept happening? So the great stipler Gon, Ryaku Kanievsky, had a sefer called the Birchas Peretz. He says, what a great psychological insight. What should they just have done? Left it. The more you hit it, but when people, he says, it's a great point. He says, when people get angry, right, they can't stop. Now, when you're in a fight with somebody, I'm not going to let that person go. And the best thing to do is walk away for a minute. And not just the person you're fighting with. When you're upset, You don't want to let that, even if you're right, you don't want to let that. You're angry. Right? Look at all these road rage, you know, just take a breath, because whatever's going to happen is not going to be worth it. So he says they're so angry, and they're angry, and they're angry. Doesn't work. Doesn't work. It keeps getting worse and worse and worse. So that's the Makom Tzardeya. We then continue. We'll talk a little bit in a minute about the goal of the plagues. But I'll just end with the following. If you go all the way to page 336, the last Makom in this parsha is the Makom of Barad. Okay, there's seven plagues in Va'ira. Vav Aleph are six or five. Six and one is seven. Bo is two and one is three. It's a good way to remember. So is a phenomenal insight by Rabbi Lamb. If you look at the psukim here, it's the pasuk chaf, and so now we're already at Barad, and things are it's getting bad. Egypt is getting really bad, and it's about to come in. All the stuff's going to come raining down on Egypt in a minute. So Moshe says, what should you do? You should take in everything that is outside. Bring it in. So listen to what it says. Hayoreis devar Hashem me'avdei Paro. This was a warning to Paro. Same way that Israel sends out leaflets. Hey, we're going to bomb you. Get out. So Paro, Moshe says, hey, Egypt. Those that fear God, heinis es avadav es migneo el habatim. If you really fear God, what should you do? You bring all your stuff inside. Now, don't look at the next pasuk. What is the opposite of Eva Hayorei es Devar Hashem? Alo Yorei es Devar Hashem. Says the Torah, Va'asher lo sam libo el Devar Hashem. That's not opposite. Fearing God and not fearing God. Rabbi Lamb, look at what I share with you. It's an awesome piece. It's an awesome piece. Says the following. I just shared with you a snippet of his drasha here. Says the following. The answer is that it is by no means awkward. It is people who are awkward, who are being criticized by the Torah. The Bible means to tell us by this choice of words is that indifference, not putting your heart into it, is the cardinal sin of mankind. Centuries later, George Bernard Shaw repeated the same idea when he wrote, the greatest sin of mankind is not hate, but indifference. Also made famous by Elie Wiesel many years later. Certainly, and despite the apparent signs of return to religion in some general way, our generation's greatest religious defect is an abysmal indifference and horrendous apathy to religion, to morals, to ethics, to Torah, in short, to God. It's purely a matter of lo sam libo. We do not pay attention to God's words. We don't put our heart into His service. Not anger at God, not rebelling against Torah, not resentment at religion. These are not the sins of our generation. Ours is a greater, subtler, and deeper sin, religious neutrality. Now, that's not to say that you have people that are angry at God. Yes, but by numbers, this is more of the issue. It is people's indifference. Right, so he continues, what happened to the Egyptian who was lo sam libo, who did not take God seriously? That he left his slaves and his cattle to die in the fields. A slave is as much as a human being as a master, and cattle are food for hungry children. But a person who is indifferent to God is indifferent to them, for they are only creatures of God. And this is what he writes at the bottom. This is great. In the translation of the Torah known as the Targum Yerushalmi, which is it's a translation of the Jerusalem translation. The translator adds some interesting notes to this matter of reaction to Egypt, to Moshe's warning about the hailstones. For the first class, the Yoreis Devar Hashem, the God-fearing Egyptians, they said they were like Eov. An example of a lo sam libo is Bilam. Okay, so turn the page. It's now why? How beautifully the Aramaic translator was able to detect this morale from the Torah's literary style and transmit it through an apt and cryptic illustration. Eov, remember, was the man who complained against God. He ranted, raved, complained, resented, objected, and protested. At times, his outbursts against God's supposed injustice were so strong that we said, right, Avram Bepuma Eov, he deserved to have his mouth stuffed with dust. Bilam never said anything untoward, offensive, or protesting to God. When called upon prophecy, he prophesied. He saw Israel as the chosen of God. And even though he was a pagan, he praised Israel. Right? So how could it be? So listen to what he says. Here's the great difference. Eov objected, but he took God seriously. He thought about him. He sought him. He demanded of him. He offered to him. He questioned him. He put his heart into godliness. Bilam, lo sam libo, never took God in earnest. When Balak said, go curse Israel, Bilam wondered whether or not he should go. He didn't care. He just went to curse. Right? And that's what he continues. What an amazing idea. That Eov, for all of his issues, still converses with God, talks to God. I mentioned last Shabbos about how all these terrible tragedies that have happened to this community over the last year. And it's okay to have questions. That is, Eliezer Berkowitz in his book, Faith After the Holocaust, talks about questioning God is not the same thing as denying God. You can have questions. So, yeah, Eov has all these issues, but he has a real relationship with God. That's what it means, lo sam libo. I don't care. Right? So I didn't have the rest of the article for you here, but all these issues that we have, passion and davening, and all these things, and learning, an outgrowth of that is some, you know, maybe different approaches to orthodoxy. But at its core, people are very indifferent. Brachos, tefillah, it's indifference. It's not that a guy's not coming to shul mostly not because he doesn't. He's like angry at God. Yeah, some people make up things. They make up things to justify their reaction. But it's indifference. It's apathy. It's from the beginning of time. You have both tochachas in the Torah speak of apathy. Apathy begins already from Adam Arisho when he eats the fruit. Right? And Hashem says to Adam, why'd you listen to your wife? And the Arachayim says, yeah, because you just took it. You didn't say, like, where's the hechsher? Is it kosher? You were indifferent. You didn't care. So that's what Bilam says. That's not yarei and lo yarei. Fearing God means to have a relationship with God. Okay. So let's take it all the way back. We're going to take it forward in a second. Go to page 340. I want to talk for a little bit today, the remaining time we have. What is the goal of the Makos? All right, what's the goal of the Makos? So the goal of the Makos cannot simply be to take the Jew out. Well, the goal of Makos can't be just take the Jews out of Egypt, because if that was the case, he could do it without the Makos. God could make a great miracle. All the Egyptians could fall asleep, and Hashem could take the Jews out, and everybody's happy. What's the goal of the Makos? And the goal of Makos can't be just to punish the Egyptians, because Hashem could have punished them and then gone out. So listen to what the Torah says at the beginning of Bo, and then we're going to work backwards. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, Bo al Paro. Go to Paro. Ki ani chibadeti yeslibo v'yeslev avodav. I have already hardened Paro's heart. Laman, which we've talked about in years past, right? The first five Makos, Paro's free will. The last five Makos, Paro's heart is literally hardened. Well, whatever that means is for a different time, whether that means that Hashem physically made him not have a decision, Hashem made him more stubborn, but Hashem does something to Paro that disables him from saying, just go. Clearly, there is a goal to the rest of the Makos. So says Paro, says Hashem, Laman, shisi oso sai ela bikir bo. I did all of these Makos so that I could do what? I needed to put on a show, Hashem says. I needed to put my sign in the world for Paro, but also for the Jews. Uleman tisaper biosnei vincho ben vincha, that later down the road, your children, grandchildren, and 1,000 generations later, you won't just say the greatness of what happened, but you'll say, Asher he's alalti v'mitzrayim. What did I do? I didn't just win. I wiped the floor with Paro. And Paro, at that time, was godlike. I made a mockery of him. V'yas oso sayasher samti vam. I put my signs there, and this is the key phrase. V'datem ki ani Hashem. So you know that I am God. What's the goal of the Makos? The goal of the Makos is, as the Ramban tells us in this next source, which we'll just read the other line for a second. The goal of the Makos is the following. The end of Parashas Bo, the Ramban says, when God performs a miracle in the sight of a desirable collective or individual, a miracle that will affect a change in the laws of nature, these attitudes of faith will be disproved in the clearest way. For the miracle, God demonstrates God's mastery over the world, His creation, His knowledge, and involvement. Those are three aspects of how God runs the world. God made the world. God continues to make the world. Because there are beliefs in history and philosophy that believe that God, or a God, made the world. But either He made the world and He's done, He set it in motion, or even if He still is around, He doesn't care about what's happening. So God makes the world. He's involved, He knows what's happening, and He's involved in the world. Additionally, when a particular miracle is preceded by a prophetic announcement, the existence of prophecy that God speaks with man and tells him his secrets will be proven, And this in turn will prove the truth of the entire Torah. So I'm telling you, Moshe, you're going to tell, and that's going to even make it more amazing that these things happen. And that's why we know, famously, if you look at the sheet at the bottom here, look at the little chart. And I want to go through some of these issues, some of this chart. But we know that, why does Paro's heart have to be hardened? So we've discussed in the past, there's different approaches, but the Sfarno says the following. Sfarno, the middle of page 3 here. Since he will be unable to tolerate the plagues, he will certainly emancipate the people. Not because he accepts the sovereignty of God and to do his will. Therefore, he hardened his heart to be able to withstand the plague and not free them. I want to make sure that when Paro lets the Jews go, he's letting the Jews go because he's learned a lesson, not because he cried uncle. If he cried uncle, then the second they leave, here's Paro. And fascinatingly, even after all the makos, what does Paro do? He still chases them, and that's the climax, in 2 weeks in Bishalach. So we know that from the Seder, we have, that's why this parsha is an important parsha to talk about, because the makos are a fundamental part of our faith. We have, Rabbi Yehuda has the simanim, okay? It has a simanim. Maybe in your home you dip the wine out a little bit, you don't dip the wine out, right? However, no points, we won't worry about points this year. You're going to win anyway. Right? So, Ditzach, now, we've talked in the past, though, that the last one is not really Ditzach Adash Ba'achav, because the last Makas Bechoros is its own category. So it's really Ditzach Adash Ba'ach, but that doesn't flow. Where did he get this from? Where did he get it from? So, he got it from the Torah. Rabbi Yehuda didn't, put, the letters in a hat, pick them out and say, oh, Dam, Tzardeya, and Kinim. No, he looked at the following. So look at the chart that I gave you here, and once we understand this chart, we're gonna look at something fascinating. The chart at the bottom here is these three. I should have done the Hebrew also, but it's Tzach, Adash, Ba'achav. Okay, blood, frogs, and lice. Look at the patterns. Look at that. The first two have a warning. Then there's no warning. If you look at the instruction, the source for what's happening. In Dam, for example, he's told, go to Paro, and then the third Makkah just happens. So those are three patterns. Okay, so right away, just learning Tanakh, without Rashis and Rambans and Sfornos and Meshach Chachmas and Radaks, you can see that there is a pattern that exists in the Makkos. Great. So what's the pattern? What's the pattern? So take your Chumash for a second, and go to... Go back to the beginning of 312. Go to 312. So this is last week's parsha. I'm telling you, there's three waves of Makos, and each wave is going to educate Paro a little bit more, and at the same time educate the Jews. So look what happens here. Beginning of Parakeh, the end of Shemos, Parsha Shemos. V'achar bo Moshe v'yaron v'yomer al Paro. They go to Moshe after the whole story. I don't want to go. I do want to go. Or Moshe goes. Koamar Hashem Elokei Yisrael. So says God. Shalach es ami v'yachoguli ba'minbar. Let him go for a little vacation. Vayomer Paro, mi Hashem. And then Jews are like, no, it's Yeshiva week. We don't want to go. There's too many Jews. Can we go the next week? Fine. Finally, Moshe negotiates. And, he didn't realize that Hashem Tos was closed. It was a whole big deal. Vayomer Paro, mi Hashem esher shema b'kolo. What does that mean? Mi Hashem esher shema b'kolo. Who is this God? Who is this God you speak of? L'shalach es Yisrael. So he's very strong. Who is this God? Not only do I not know him, I'm going to let you know. Lo yodati es Hashem. I don't know this God. V'gam es Yisrael ha-shalach. Now what is, first it's just important to know, das, knowledge in the Torah doesn't just mean I know who you are. Das is intimate. It is a deep connection. So much so that in the Torah, when describes a husband and a wife, Adam Yodas Chava Ishto, when they had relations, it's deep, it's intimate. So Moshe doesn't need Hashem to come out from the sky and say, it's me, with a plane, with a little message, it's Hashem. Paro's, even if he believes there might be a God, I don't believe that there is this really, this God that you speak of that has this deep, intimate connection. So Hashem says, yeah, let me prove it to you. And therefore, what you have in these three waves, So now, take your Chumash and go to, or skip around a little bit, page 330. So, go to page 330. So let's go to the bottom. Okay? So this is the end of the first wave of plagues. Okay? Vayomer Hashem Moshe Hashkem HaBoker V'hisyatsev Lifnei Paro. Go to Paro, who Yinei Yotze Amayim V'amartze Love, and tell him again, turn the page, that you should send out the Jewish people. Oh, that's not the right pasuk. Yeah, it is. Hold on one second. Hold on. Oh, no, I'm sorry. 326. I was on the second wave already. Go to 326. Pasuk, Yeah, that's what I meant. Perek Zayin, Pasuk Yud Zayin. So the first wave, go tell Paro. Komar Hashem Bizos Teida. Why Teida? Because you, Paro, said, I don't know God. So, let's have an introduction. Ki ani Hashem, hine anochi ma'ake b'mateh asher b'yodi al ha'mayim asher b'aliyar. I'm going to hit the water. So the first wave is, I'm going to show you that I exist. How am I going to do that? Well, I'm going to take all these things, first of all, the things that you think are your God, like the Nile, and what am I going to do with them? I control them. Right? I can control them. Number one is that I exist. This whole process of Paro and Moshe is a meeting. It's an introduction, right? You can't just start a meeting without an introduction, right? So let's meet each other. Here, my name is Paro, and I think I'm the head of the world. My name is Hashem. Look at what I can do. I said Friday night when I brought my oldest to a yeshiva in Minneapolis last week to try out for Shabbos. So I drop him off, and then we ran to a shul nearby for Mincha Maariv, and it's like 2 minutes from Mincha Maariv, and the rabbi wasn't there, so nobody was speaking, and I wasn't going to tell him who I was. So a guy says to me, oh, Shalom Aleichem, where are you from? I'm from Chicago. He goes, great. His brother lives in Chicago. Wonderful. So he goes, where do you live? I go, I live in Lincolnwood. I was okay. Where do you daven? Now what do I say? So I'm like, oh, KJBS. He goes, I never heard of it. I go, all right. It's a good shul. He goes, who's the rabbi? And I'm like, now, great. Now what am I going to do? So I told him the rabbi's name. He goes, never heard of him. I go, he's a good guy. Now he's a good guy. And we left it at that. So this is an introduction of Paro and Moshe. Now that's just wave number one. Paro needs to be educated on three things. That God exists. That God, not only does he exist, he's involved in the running of the world. And he has a special nation called the Jewish people. So that's step number one. Now go to wave number two on page 332. So now we have the second wave. In the second wave of Makos, we have not just God's existence, but God can control the world. And look at what the Pasuk says in Pasuk 18. V'hiflesi bayomahu es eretz Goshen. I, God says, am able to, during these Makos, also do what? I live in this world, so I can come down from the heavens and control in the ground. Bayomahu es eretz Goshen asher ami omed alev levilte yosham ha'arov. Again, Laman Te Da. Rabbi Huda, when he gave the Simanim, he learned Tanakh. And he said the word Te Da appears when Moshe Paro says, I don't know God. So God says, I'm going to let you know who I am. So now we have the first wave God exists. The second wave that he exists in this world. And what's the third wave supposed to be? So now we get to the third wave. Now I'll go to next week's Parsha. Go to page 336. 336. Top of page 336, Pasuk Yudalit. Okay, says the following. Kipama zos asher ani sholeach es kol magefosai al libcha. When I do all of these things, bavadecha uva'amecha, I am able to do what? I am able to make sure that my people don't get affected. Bavor teida. And now, all of a sudden, Paro has been educated that, number one, he exists. He continues to exist, not just in the world, but he can run the world in our world, that he can do anything he wants, whenever he wants, however he wants. And he's able to, at the same time, do it with an extreme executive and supreme power. And he also has a nation that he protects. And all of a sudden, Paro went from feeling that he's in charge to realizing that he's a nobody. And the Jews went from realizing that they obviously had faith in Hashem because they kept along and they knew of Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, and the Shvatim, obviously, but that he cares about us, which is still a lesson that will take a little bit of time for them to learn and to appreciate. And that's sort of the education. That really takes you straight through, but that's why Paro's heart needed to be hardened, according to the Sforno. Paro needed to be taught this lesson. So when he finally tells the Jews, you can go, he's saying, you can go because, you know, you're right. He exists. I don't have time to share with you the last piece. If you turn the page, you can read it on your own. This piece from Rav Hirsch, which is a really, really fascinating thing to consider. I'll read you the first paragraph, then you can read the rest on your own. Or you can save this for Pesach. Closer inspection reveals a correspondence between the three groups and three basic aspects of the Egyptian gullus, which were eliminated by the redemption. So Rav Hirsch says three things: Inoy, affliction; Avdus, slavery; and Geirus, making them feel like they weren't strangers. These were components of the affliction Egypt brought upon Israel in these late Egypt's sin. These same conditions were now, through the plagues, be brought also upon the Egyptians to impress upon them that their lording it over this hapless people was without justification, to make them feel upon their flesh the bitterness of the affliction they brought upon their victims. So he shows that throughout all of the stages, each Makkah had a little bit of each. So that throughout each one of these stages, they felt a little bit, the Egyptians felt a little bit like strangers, they felt a little bit like slaves, and they felt a little bit afflicted. But that's really what the goal of the Makos were, and we're very important for the Jews, for the Bnei Yisrael, to realize this. They're going to go out and follow Hashem. Hashem later tells the Jews, what's in God's snap, so to speak, in his photo album of the Jewish people? Hashem would make a snapfish album. So what's in it? So what's in it when the Torah says, when the Navi says, Kalmar Hashem zachartid lachesed ne'urayich, you followed me. To get to that point, needed the Jews to understand who God was, the relationship God has to the Jewish people, the things that he could do, because they were ultimately going to have to go out and beat nations in Israel and trust in God and get the Torah. And all of this, they needed to be educated as well as to the relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's how Rabbi Yehuda, he sees these three waves. He sees the word Teida, Teida, Teida. He sees how we are educating Paro, and at the same time, how the Jews are being educated. All right. Thank you, and Shalom Shalom and Aliyah.
Rabbi?
Yes.
I'm surprised.